and welcome back. It's been quite a week in AI. The kind where you start Monday thinking you'll cover model releases and end up in a constitutional crisis about export controls. Let's get into it. The story that consumed everything else this week was the shutdown of Claude Fable 5. 36 hours after Anthropic released it publicly, the US government issued an export control directive, and Fable went dark for everyone, including, in one of the more surreal details of the whole affair, Anthropic's own employees who hold non-American passports. Fireship called it the first time in history a major AI provider has pulled a live public model on government orders. Anthropic had no practical way to verify nationality on the fly, so they did the only thing they could. They turned it off for everybody. Now, the official story is that Amazon researchers found a jailbreak, nothing technically exotic, just some Unicode tricks and roleplay framing, reported it up the chain, and Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick signed the directive. Anthropic got 90 minutes' notice and no specific explanation of the threat. That's the part that made several commentators raise an eyebrow, including AI Explained, who laid out 11 contextual details in a careful video. Some of them point toward a genuine, if panicked, security response. Others are harder to explain charitably. Pete Hegseth had been posting aggressively against Anthropic on social media. OpenAI adjacent money flowed heavily into Trump's PAC. Anthropic's didn't. The government falsely claimed CEO Dario Amodei was on a wellness retreat. Anthropic and a journalist who was actually with him disputed that directly. Whether you read this as a security overreaction or something more deliberate probably depends on your priors, and honestly, both can be true at once. There's a separate layer of controversy that Theo from T3.gg excavated, and it's worth sitting with. Fable, from the start, contained invisible safeguards specifically around what Anthropic called frontier LLM development. Prompts in that territory were silently redirected or degraded, with no feedback to the user, who was still paying full price. Anthropic revised this practice under pressure, making the fallback to Opus 4.8 visible rather than silent. Kyle Balmer's analysis was precise on what Fable actually was technically: Mythos 5 with additional safety classifiers, designed to work autonomously for hours on complex tasks rather than responding to individual prompts. David Shapiro added the ideological context. Anthropic's less wrong and effective altruism roots led them to deliberately route complex ML research requests to the weaker Opus model to prevent recursive self-improvement. Whether you find that prudent or paternalistic probably also depends on your priors. The deeper technical point, which AI Explained made clearly, is that jailbreaking remains an unsolved problem. No model is universally resistant. Amodei himself argued that the government needs to distinguish between narrow, specific jailbreaks and universal bypasses, a reasonable distinction that apparently didn't survive contact with the directive. Negotiations were ongoing in Washington at the time of recording, with a return under tighter controls expected within the month. Kyle Balmer made explicit what this moment represents beyond the immediate politics. It's the first time frontier AI intelligence has been formally reserved for paying users in a wealthy country, with everyone else cut off. That's a new kind of digital class question, and it's not going away. Nate Herc's analysis of OpenAI's Built to Benefit Everyone plan and Anthropic's parallel statements is worth noting here. Both labs are publicly calling for an external body that could pause frontier development if necessary. Not because they want to slow down voluntarily, but because the competitive pressure makes unilateral restraint impossible. They're asking for a referee, not offering self-restraint. Unsupervised Learning spent a whole discussion debating whether Amadei's 25% risk estimate is illiberal or simply responsible, without reaching consensus, but landing on the reasonable observation that centralized private control is as dangerous as state control. Neither is obviously preferable. The geopolitical frame comes from Wolfgang Hearn on Everlast AI, who's been watching China for 4 decades. Huawei has announced an alternative chip fabrication process called Tau, targeting 1.4 nanometer equivalent density by 2031, which would match TSMC. The US export restriction strategy rests on controlling chip access. If that lever erodes, the entire geopolitical calculus shifts. Hearn's assessment of Europe is blunt. The problem isn't cognitive, it's structural. The knowledge exists. The implementation doesn't happen. Moving from geopolitics to economics, Nate B. Jones published a series of essays this week that I'd recommend reading together. The core distinction he's drawing is between tokens, raw intelligence, increasingly a commodity, and what he calls the harness, everything that turns raw intelligence into productive work. Context management, evaluations, routing between cheap and expensive models, workflow definitions, memory. His argument is that whoever controls the harness controls the value, and the IPOs of OpenAI and Anthropic are the first public test of whether that thesis holds. David Shapiro made a similar point with a different framing. Selling tokens is like selling electricity. The money is in what runs on it. On the bubble question, which Jones handles better than most, his answer is essentially that the question is too binary. The demand is real. OpenAI went from $2 billion to over $20 billion in annualized revenue in 2 years, 40% from enterprise customers making deliberate budget decisions. NVIDIA's data center revenue at nearly $200 billion for fiscal 2026 is physical evidence, not speculation. But the market is only beginning to sort between genuine workflow value and demo value, and that sorting will take years. The railroad analogy is apt. The railroads were real, the economic transformation was real, and a lot of railroad investors still got destroyed. The iGrid made the pricing point that deserves attention. The $20 flat rate is a subsidized entry strategy, not a sustainable business model. OpenAI is already losing money on the $200 Pro plan. GitHub Copilot is moving to token-based billing. The IPO pressure will likely force a repricing in 2026, and it will probably happen gradually enough that most users won't notice until they do. On the practical side of the week, a few things worth flagging for people who actually build with these tools. Leon Van Zyl ran a 30-day comparison of Claude Code versus Codex on a real project. An 8N-style workflow automation app. The results were genuinely mixed in interesting ways. Claude won on design quality. Codex won on project structure, technical planning questions, and cost efficiency. Codex used 16% of a $100 plan. Claude used 8% of a $250 plan. Depending on which direction you do that math, the answer differs. Cole Medin's critique of loop engineering as a marketing term is worth hearing. His argument is that without a deterministic workflow file, durability through something like Postgres, and explicit cost controls, agent loops become expensive and uncontrollable fast. His alternative, Archon, is open source and includes a dashboard via Retool. Melvinx migrated his entire CodeLine platform from Next.js to TanStack Start. Over 100,000 lines added, 129,000 removed. Build time dropped from 3.5 minutes to 80 seconds. But the argument he found most compelling wasn't performance. TanStack Start is declarative and explicit, follows web standards rather than proprietary abstractions, and AI agents understand it better as a result. They generate more consistent code. That's a genuinely interesting inversion, choosing a framework partly based on how well AI tools handle it. The open source model story this week was dominated by GLM 5.2 from Xi, MIT licensed, 1 million token context, running in 2-bit quantization on a 256 gigabyte Mac Studio at 82% accuracy, according to Everlast AI. Nick Sarayev ran 7 practical demos comparing it to Opus 4.8 and concluded it has more taste right now, better visual design outputs, more aesthetic choices. Nate Herc used it as a direct engine swap in Claude Code via OpenRouter, pointing the base URL at ZII's API. The gap between open source and frontier is now, by most accounts, around 4 months, rather than the 6 to 8 it was a year ago. Kimi K2.7 code from Moonshot AI is worth a mention. Roughly 1 billion parameters in a mixture of experts' architecture. 30% better instruction following than K2.6, meaningfully cheaper than frontier models. Alejandro AO's benchmark approach was sensible. Use an expensive model like Opus or GPT-5.5 as the planner, Kimi as the implementer, and you get most of the quality at a fraction of the cost. The context window at 262K is the main limitation. SubQ got attention from the AI grid for its sub-quadratic sparse attention architecture. 56 times faster than Flash Attention 2 at 1 million tokens, 12 million token context window. 100% needle in haystack accuracy, up to 2 million tokens. The numbers are striking. The caveats are also real. Benchmarks come from SubQ themselves. Model weights aren't public. And the known weakness is short everyday prompts, which is most of what agents actually do. Independent verification is pending. A few quick things from the lighter end of the week. PewDiePie. Yes, that PewDiePie. Released an open-source chat interface called Odysseus, which hit 65,000 GitHub stars almost immediately. It runs through Ollama Cloud rather than local GPU, which is a pragmatic middle ground between full data sovereignty and actual usability. The interesting thing isn't the technology. It's that a creator with 100 million subscribers is positioning decentralized AI as a counterweight to Google and OpenAI. That's a cultural signal worth noting. Melvinks also published what I thought was one of the more honest pieces of the week, a personal account of spending over $4,000 on API calls in a single week and playing 341 games of chess as a reaction to waiting for agents to finish work. He's not sure how to solve it. Neither is anyone else, really. The thought I keep coming back to from this week is something Nate B. Jones said in his voice cloning essay. He demonstrated a synthetic clone of his own voice, then argued that the genuinely scarce resource in an AI-saturated world isn't content. It's judgment. Specifically, the assurance that a real person made the decisions and can be held accountable for them. The Fable situation illustrates this from a completely different angle. A government shutting down a model because it can't verify who's using it. A company that secretly degraded outputs without telling paying customers. A jailbreak that worked through conceptual framing rather than technical exploitation. At every level, the question isn't what the model can do. It's who decided, and whether anyone is actually responsible for what happens next.